Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Sané here, and today we've got another special guest for you. Someone a bit different, who's not a junior doctor, but who does have some sort of tech background. And he wasn't a junior doctor too long ago, actually. I think he said 6 or 7 years. And so today we have on for you Dr. Imran Qureshi, who's a consultant microbiologist in Croydon. And he's here to talk to us all about, you know, well-being for junior doctors and any tips and advice he can give as a consultant who supports his F1s and F2s and other junior docs on the shop floor.
You're listening to What Medical School Doesn't Teach Us, where we tackle pro financial tips for medical students and foundation year doctors, career ideas, and how to leverage your skills and time more effectively. Join us, and remember the golden rule: this podcast is for general information only and does not constitute any form of advice.
So welcome on, Imran.
Thank you, Sunny. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for the wider team Medics Money for having me on this podcast as well.
No, it's absolutely our pleasure. And I guess for a bit of context for everyone, you know, honestly, this conversation kind of just came around from me seeing one of Imran's posts on LinkedIn, where he creates these sort of almost like little goodie bags for his new F1s, F2s, everyone rotating onto his department. And he creates these little goodie bags, writes a personal note, like signs it off himself, attaches the name, and then kind of just hand delivers them to them. And I thought that was very heartwarming, and I thought that was something really unique because I've never seen a consultant do that, to be honest. And I kind of just wanted to ask you, like, where does that idea come about? Like, where did it come out from?
I suppose it's a good question. I suppose from multiple places, really. I suppose that I think part of it is just it's just my personality, I suppose. I'm big on teamwork. I like it. I think it's a really critical factor to just harmonious relationships in the workplace, really. You know, if your team knows that you're there, you know, that they can approach you, whatever happens, all of these things are important. And I've sort of felt that ever since I was a very junior doctor, like having a good team, having a good sort of that morale that you need in the workplace. I remember I was an orthopedic SHO in St. Peter's Hospital, and we were 11 SHOs in the department, and it was by far the best team I've ever worked with. I'm not necessarily talking about the consultants, although the consultants were quite nice as well. But the other SHOs that I worked with, you know, it was such a functional team. Like, it was just 11 of us, even though one of us would be on call every day, somebody else would just buddy with that person every day without fail, without asking. Somebody say, oh, I'll buddy with Imran, or I'll buddy with Rebecca, or I'll buddy with Zia, you know, or just, you know, like purely from the goodness of your heart, you know, type of thing, because you value your colleagues. And, you know, those are sort of moments in your life that you care about, you know, that you feel just the warmth and the love from other people. And there's nothing that really beats that in the workplace. You know, even if you had a horrible day, like you've been on call and it's been a little bit relentless, but you know, the fact that somebody's there to have your back is just lovely. It really is. And it just changes the whole working environment, working perspective. And I was very sad to leave that team. And we all were. We all sort of rotated, and we always said that it was a really lovely team to work with. But I think, you know, just one's own ethics, values, ethos. You know, I'm one of five siblings. I'm the eldest, or the joint eldest. I'm a twin, so I'm the joint eldest of five siblings. And then my youngest brother is 12 years younger than me. So I've always had sort of like a pseudo parental role almost, you know, especially in the cultures that we come from, that's usually more the case as well. And, you know, just the way that I genuinely feel about, you know, embracing colleagues as equals, really. I write about this a lot, that I don't, and it's quite controversial and other consultants don't like it, but, you know, it's my opinion and not theirs, but I don't really value the medical hierarchy in the way that it's understood. I just think it's one of the, you know, great fallacies of healthcare. I think there's such a thing as a knowledge hierarchy, and I think that people need to respect that. You know, I do respect to myself. I think that's completely different to somebody saying, I'm a consultant, you're an F1, so you need to just, I need to treat you a certain way, or we need to have a type of relationship. As far as I'm concerned, my F1s know a lot more about me than certain topics. What does that mean? And even beyond that, let's just say that we're not even talking about that. And I wrote about this in another post as well, as an example, that, you know, people call me Dr. Qureshi, right? But why? I don't really understand. Okay, so when nurses, when nurse specialists in a particular area have been nurses for 40 years, right, and are super experienced in a particular area, we could almost say that they're specialists. I mean, they are really. You know, why do they not be, why are they not called Mrs. or Miss or whatever? Why is that preference given to doctors in that sense? I mean, why are we owed a different level of respect? And I think that's where the medical hierarchy betrays itself as something which is slightly ridiculous, you know, because if it's got to do with experience and length of service, then we should be calling, you know, my ex-specialist nurse Deepa has been, you know, she was my OPAT nurse and has been, you know, a nurse for a lot longer than, you know, some of my F1s have been alive, right, and knows a darn sight more about infection than they do. They should call her Miss Matthew, yeah. But they don't. They call her Deepa. Yet they'll call me Dr. Qureshi. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't even make sense. So for me, that whole idea, that whole construct in healthcare is just, it's just complete anathema to me. I really still don't get it. And one of the things that I actually insist on is that when my F1s start with me, I say, guys, my name is Imran, okay? I'm the only time I'm called Dr. Qureshi is for medical notes. Okay. If you want to write my name in some notes, then by all means, write Dr. Qureshi. Otherwise, you don't need to call me Dr. Qureshi. Okay. Because the one thing that we do know is that if we flatten the hierarchy, okay, and we make ourselves approachable, then people will talk to us. They'll ask us questions. They won't feel inhibited. That's the way we're going to get to better patient care. You know, when I know that, like today is an example, my F1, she was sitting next to me, right? And I could see she wanted to ask me a question, but she was asking me a lot of questions, right? And for me, that's okay. I don't mind her asking me questions because that's what my job is, to help you and answer your questions, you know? And she's day two or three, whatever, day two, right? So she wasn't saying it. I could just sense her hesitation. I just turned to her and I said, you want to ask the question? Just ask the question. I said, don't feel any inhibition about it. And she goes, well, I want to, but I'm asking so many. I said, but that's okay. You shouldn't feel like you can't ask me. You know, you should feel like you can.
Absolutely.
And this is a completely open relationship. And, you know, I said, yeah, if we're a year down the line and you're asking me 100 questions, yeah, I'll say, okay, maybe you haven't learned as much as I thought you should have, right? But this is day two. Ask all the questions you want. It's absolutely fine. And we'll keep going, you know. So I think there's something around, you know, psychological safety, you know, and of course, there's this whole thing about civility. Of course, civility saves lives. So the campaign that's being run by somebody that was mentioned on one of my LinkedIn posts. And, you know, patient safety, these things are all interconnected. They're all interconnected. And as much as, you know, things like pay restoration are super important, psychologically important, they are, right? You know, the right for us to take industry action is important and so on. But so is psychological safety. It's just as important. And, you know, and I say this not meaning to demean the patient in any way, but it's not just for patient safety. It's because people are humans. They're other human beings, right? Like my nurse or my F1, right? They're somebody's daughter, somebody's mother, somebody's partner, somebody's wife, and so on. You know, it affects a whole load of people. And I remember when I was a registrar, I went through not a nice time. I went through some bullying. And what was really sad about it is actually the impact that it had on my wife. My twin brother was particularly, used to get particularly upset about it. And he said, I'm going to go and give your consultant peace of my mind. And I was like, no, don't do that. There's no point of doing that. You know, but you know, my mother used to cry. She used to cry physical tears when she used to see how upset I was. And I was 34 at the time, right? But still my mum is crying, shedding tears over the fact that I'm upset because somebody's being horrible to me. It's a ridiculous moment. And the person who's doing it doesn't realize the repercussions of it's what I call networks and nodes, right? So I may be the node, but there's a whole network of people attached to me, right? So it doesn't just affect one person, it affects a whole group of people. And I'm not saying be nice to people because it affects their parents, but I'm just saying, look at the repercussions of what happens when you are horrible to somebody, you know? And
it's almost like a domino effect, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. And it's usually somebody's own personal issue that they can't resolve, that they're taking out on somebody else. It's just childish and demeaning, I think, and it just debases a human being to do it. So for me, when I became a consultant, the one thing that I knew very clearly was that I wanted to be a foundation program director. It was on the top of my list of things to do. And I remember that I was a locum consultant. I sort of treaded water in Southampton for a year before I got my substantive post at Croydon. And they asked me to stay as a consultant microbiologist in Southampton. And I said, I'm only going to stay if there's a possibility of having the foundation role. They said, we've only recently just appointed the foundation program director, so probably not. I was like, well, that's important to me. And after I came to Croydon, I think I became the foundation program director within, I think, a year. I think it was a year or something like that. Because the job opened up, you know, and my boss had told me that there's a very good chance that's going to happen. So from there, for me, right, I'm like, okay, I'm in charge of the pastoral well-being of other human beings. So I don't even see them as F1s. You know, they're just other human beings and we are colleagues, right? I don't think of them as my children or my babies or some infantilization like that. I just literally think of them as other colleagues, right? So for me, how would I like to be treated? I would like somebody to welcome me. I would like somebody to show me some love. You know, it's just what I would want. So when I started as the foundation program director, what I did was I decided that for my every new coming batch of F1s, I would give them like a gift, some chocolates, you know, a pen, a notebook, and I'd handwrite a card. Right. So it's, you know, the first time I did it, I remember my wife said to me, she goes, why don't you just print it? Yeah. In fact, somebody else said it to me. I won't mention who that person because they'll be identifiable. My wife won't mind. But she said, why didn't you print it? And someone of the other sort of senior physicians and masters said, just print it. And I said, no. I said, because that will just feel like I didn't care, you know, if I printed it. You know, even this year, my wife sort of said to me, she goes, are you still writing those cards? And I was like, yes, I am. And she goes, let me write half of them for you. And my wife has beautiful handwriting, really lovely handwriting. And I said, no, because I won't have written it, you know, and for me, that's important, you know. So it's just, you know, like when I give it to them on the first day, you know, it's not about scoring brownie points. I'm not trying to do that. I don't need to in many ways, you know. I'm not going to, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm just extending a little bit of love and compassion to other people saying, I'm here, I recognize this is difficult, this is all new, a little bit anxiety inducing, you know, but, you know, here's some love and support, you know, it's open, you know. And I've been doing that every year since I was the foundation program director. And usually what I do every year, and this is the first year I haven't done it, is that I write a thank you card to every single one of my outgoing F1s. But this year I had a ton of work to do and I just didn't get around to it. So I did, this was the first year I didn't do it and I felt really gutted that I didn't do it because I just didn't have the time. But usually I write like a personal, because the F1s coming in, they get a very generic note because I don't know any of them, right? So they'll all get the same card, but it'll be handwritten. But for my outgoing ones, I always write a bespoke one to each one of them, just highlighting, you know, what they've done, to thank them for what they've done. And that's always important to me. And I was genuinely gutted that this year I just couldn't find the time to do it. And probably that was my own lack of management more than anything else. And I'm determined next year to make sure that I don't fall into that problem again. But again, I think it's about making people feel valued.
I was just going to say, it's really hot. It's really like sort of moving to hear this, obviously, because so how long have you been program director for now? Foundation program director, 5 years?
I started in February. Yeah, 5 years. It's just been five and a bit years. February 2018 is when I started.
So it's honestly, it's so refreshing to hear almost, because at the moment, at least for me, it's in the news at the moment, or when I speak to my seniors who've just started it, they're like, you know, it's really tough. You know, we don't really get much time to do this, or, you know, all the stuff going on about pay restoration at the moment. So many people striking and everything. It's just healthcare as a whole is just sort of going downhill. It's in decline almost. And you kind of need these like beacons of hope, or, you know, these sorts of actions to lift everyone up, create that sort of camaraderie almost.
You're hitting the nail on the head, and that's really what the whole intention behind it is. You know, nobody sort of gives me an award or anything, and nor am I seeking one. I always get obviously a thank you and stuff like that, which is lovely. But, you know, other than that, what more do you want other than for your colleagues to be happy? You know, what I want is a group of people came in to leave 1 year later and just be happy, you know, just to know that we did a good job and that somebody noticed, somebody gave a damn, you know, that they thought these people worked really hard and we appreciated it. And one of the other things that I do, or I've been doing every year, this is the easier one, is that I plant a grove of trees every year, or I have them planted in the Scottish Highlands as like a gift, like a thank you gift to the outgoing F1. So I sort of, you know, wanted to give them like a meaningful gift, you know, like I could give them all some sort of toy or something, but, you know, but I think that they're still there. They'll be there for goodness's, hopefully, centuries. I always say, just like we've watched you grow and you're giving life to the NHS, you know, as the clinicians that you are, you know, I'm planting these trees so they'll give life to the earth, you know, and help in a sustainable way, but in your names. So it's, you know, it's just something, again, just to show people, like, I super appreciate you as human beings. And I do. I genuinely value every single one of those people because I know what it's like. I know that it's hard. I know that they put up with a lot. And yeah, it's nothing. It's no skin off my nose to do it, you know. It's these small things that actually, you know, they stay with people. And my hope is that when these people are in my position, that they'll do the same thing for other people, that they'll genuinely reach out and say, I'm here, I'm listening, I'm helping. You know, that's all I can ask for, really, in that sense.
Yeah, that's such a strong symbol, honestly. You know, the planting the trees and they're going to grow, and, you know, your F1s are going to hopefully carry on in their medical careers and develop as people and so on. I think that's a really strong sort of symbolization there. And I think, honestly, I've been listening for the last couple of minutes and it's all just so much to take in, because I really didn't, like, if I'm totally honest, I think it's the first time I've ever heard a consultant doing any of this. I'm sure there's a couple of others doing this out there as well.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more. You know, I'm sure that there are other people doing lovely things. But again, you know, how do you build psychological safety and security? You know, so again, you know, how do you quell people's anxiety? So about a month before my F1 start, I've got all of their phone numbers. I make a WhatsApp group and I say, just send them an email, introduce myself and just say, guys, I'm going to add you to a WhatsApp group. If you have any questions, just ask. I've set up like a Notion page with ton of information on it. I'm saying, there's lots and lots of information about the questions you're going to ask. I know because I get them every year. So I say, I've answered most of the frequently answered questions. If you've got any questions after that, just give me a shout. Like today, I went to their teaching, and afterwards, you know, two of them said, oh, we're really upset about something. So I took them aside and I gave them some advice about how to approach different situations. You know, I was like, don't feel like people can take advantage of you, because people do, you know, new F1s, people take advantage. So I've got this other little cultural thing that I do, which is on the first day, I don't really do it after that, but on the first day, at the end of the day, I walk around all the wards where all the F1s are, and I make sure that they're going to go home imminently, because I'm like, people are going to take advantage of you, and that's not your job. Don't be sucked into staying here for hours on end when you don't need to. That's what on-call people are for. I said, do what you need to do, but then leave, you know. And again, you know, it's just a small thing. I spend an hour walking around. Are you okay? 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 Are you going home? Are you going home? Are you going home? You know, that type of thing. And, you know, so people just know he's there. He genuinely wants, he genuinely cares. He genuinely wants, you know, what's best for us. And if I can just keep that momentum going throughout the year, then that's fine. I've achieved what I wanted to achieve and hopefully generated a whole lot of goodwill. So as an example, I had two F1s yesterday who were a little bit stranded, actually. I must say they were a little bit stranded. Just not because anybody was being difficult. It's just the way that the chips fell, you know, other new doctors, consultants in theatre and so on. It was just unfortunate, not by any intention. But what happened was two of my old F1s who stayed in the trust, they came and helped them on the board. And I sent a message to both of them saying, thank you so much for going and supporting and helping. You know, they were due to start in ED, but they had a little time after induction. They just went back to the ward, their old ward, and just helped, you know. And I thought, you know, this is the type of thing that we need in the NHS, just a little bit of recognition that other people are human. So I messaged the two guys that went and helped, and I said, thank you for being awesome. You know, they really valued it, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, if we manage to create this sort of work environment or atmosphere where, you know, you've got this sort of more flat structure rather than having this entire hierarchy, and you've just got this supportive culture, things will just be so much better. And, you know, people would want to work in the NHS. It would be a place where we come together. We, you know, we put the patient first almost. And I think we deliver better patient care as a result of this sort of better communication, better relationships, and a better atmosphere overall. So, and, you know, those two people coming over to help before starting their rotation, just out of, honestly, probably just out of, first of all, like, probably the values and, like, things you instilled in them from, like, day one. And also just because they're also, like, you know, good people, and they realize these people need help and we're free and we're going to go help. And, you know, if they'd been overworked, or, you know, if they didn't have that sort of, if they hadn't, I guess, sort of started developing those sorts of values from either you and, you know, the entire team at Croydon, they might have just gone home and not been there to help support And, you know, that's where you spiral away, I guess. And you almost, again, end up in this sort of really toxic work culture where it's all just a mess, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I can't take, you know, most of the credit. My colleagues in my postgraduate center, they're amazing, like literally amazing people. Like, honestly, because I only work in the hospital 2 days a week, because I do 2 days there and then 3 days in AWS. So when I'm not there, you know, these guys are the ones always picking up the pieces in the background, helping people, you know, making them cups of tea, sitting them down when they're a little bit upset, you know, stuff like that. I mean, having a team which is so well sort of based in that value set and that ethos is just super important, you know. And I, the other members of the PGMC, the education team, super nice, really lovely, salt of the earth type of people. And it makes such a difference, honestly. It really does.
Yeah, I can imagine. And yeah, I can imagine the kind of difference it makes, because, you know, from personal experience as well, when medicine's gotten hard and you need like just that, those people, like your seniors, or you need like your professors to be there for you, and they've been there, and that's made the entire difference. You know, I've gone away with feeling supported, feeling prepared, feeling assured, you know, things are going to work out. And, you know, reality is we all go through a hard phase, you know, whether that's, and we all understand that being a junior doctor or medicine, or even later down his training, it gets hard. You know, you will have rough days, but in that time, you just need the support, and that support just needs to be in place. And, you know, the sooner it's being put into place, in your case, you know, you do it straight away. Like even before they come in, you message them a month before, you send them the WhatsApp group, you send them the Notion link, and you get them all set up. Those kinds of things, those kinds of small things, which if you just create them once and then it's just naturally like reoccurs every year because you just kind of recycle the Notion page, things like that, it just makes a hell of a difference. And yeah, simply incredible. What kind of advice would you give to F1s? Obviously, you're foundation program director and you've seen so many F1s coming through in the last 5 years. What advice would you give to F1s who've just started in terms of, you know, for example, dealing with like harsh consultants or tough work days, or, you know, fallouts potentially with like ward staff?
Yeah, that was one of the situations that occurred today, actually, where the two F1s who came to speak to me, they're saying that, you know, that a nurse came and was very rude and, you know, didn't even sort of give context to the situation, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, look, I said, that should never happen for a start, you know. And even to me as a consultant, happens sometimes, like somebody would just phone me, is rude to me, like, hey, we're on the same team, right? And I said to them, I said, this is what you should say. I said, look, I'm here to help, but I don't appreciate that tone. I said, but I'm here to help, you know, so how can we resolve this together? So the thing is that when somebody comes and they're agitated, okay, the worst thing that you can do is start shouting and screaming at them, because it may just be a simple misunderstanding. And while they shouldn't speak to you like that, the best way to kill somebody is with a little bit of kindness, honestly, because it immediately disarms the person, right? So, oh, I expected a fight and now I'm not getting one. This person's being a little bit reasonable. Let me be, because then it just embarrasses the other person. Most people will be embarrassed, yeah, especially the nursing staff. You know, and nursing staff generally are lovely, right? But you do get one or two who get a little bit upset. And, you know, and like I said to the guys, I said, guys, if that ever happens, you know, just say that while I'm here to help and I want to help, but I don't appreciate the tone in which you're speaking to me. So I'd really appreciate it if we could have a really nice conversation. I can try and help you with what's going on, you know, even though you might be really, really upset inside. You know, you might think, who's this person to speak to me like that? But that doesn't solve anything. You know, it doesn't solve anything in the long term. I've made those mistakes before. I've made the mistake of arguing before. I mean, fine, I'm arguing, they're arguing, it doesn't go anywhere. It's a pointless conversation. It didn't end up anything. Neither of us helped the patient. We just became both a little bit miserable. So I'm saying that from having done the wrong thing before, that, you know, the right thing is just to diffuse. And now when and it's very rare that I have that type of conversation, but if I ever do, I'm like, steady, you know, we're on the same side. That type of thing. Let's take it from there. And if there's been some misunderstanding, we can sort it out, you know. But I know that, you know, people say, well, it's very easy for you because you're a consultant and you can say X, Y, and Z. I was like this as a junior doctor as well. In fact, it was when I went to the International Forum on Quality and Safety in Healthcare for the first time. That was in 2009. And I learned about systems and variability and how, you know, human behavior and human factors change clinical environments and stuff like that. I was like, wow, I was like, I'm just as important as all these other type of senior people. I genuinely believe that. I genuinely believed at that point, I still do, that everybody, every single person is there to play a role. Okay. When somebody says, I'm just an F1, I was like, please don't say just an F1. Those two words should never be together. Okay. You are here because you are qualified, because you've met the grade, because you've got the experience. Okay. And fine. Not to say that you haven't got some learning to do. Of course you do. But you are bringing something to the table. So you're not just anybody. You're a colleague. You're here to help, you know, look after patients. Don't sell yourself short, you know, in that type of way. So, you know, F1's, and they're going to, again, people are going to say it's easy for you to say it, but don't be, right? Because at the end of the day, nobody should treat anybody else badly, whoever they are. And it's happened a few times over the years as I've been Foundation Program Director. And I remember I was on, it was the first week, but I was on annual leave on the Thursday and the Friday of that week. This was 3 years ago? 3 years ago, I think it was. And my foundation administrator from the PGMC, she called me and I was at home. And actually, my home is only 5 minutes drive away. It's not very far. And she said, oh, Imran, one of the F1s is crying her eyes out. She's here crying her eyes out. And I was like, I will be there in 5 minutes. Okay, so I jumped in my car, went to the hospital, and I walked in. And lo and behold, there were two F1s there. One was absolutely sobbing. And the other one was clearly comforting her in some way. And I said, tell me what happened. And she said, such and such registrar had been really awful to her, you know, and, you know, she just couldn't. And I said to the other F1, I said, give me your bleep. I said, take her for coffee. Just help her to just calm down, go for half an hour, just chill out. I said, I'll hold your bleeps and then I'm going to go and talk to the registrar. So then I went and found the registrar, and a registrar I knew very well, okay, and I knew his personality. So he was in the middle of the surgical office where there was other consultants and other people. And then I walked in and one of the consultants says, Dr. Qureshi, how can we help you? And I said to the consultant who was there, I said, I'm here to speak to that young man. And he said, is he in trouble? I said, no, he's not in trouble. I just need to talk to him about something. So I took that registrar and I took him to a very private, quiet place where we wouldn't be disturbed. Yeah. And he said, Dr. Qureshi, how can I help you? And I said, look, I like you. You know, I think we're friends and I want us to remain that way. But one of my F1s who works for you just came crying a lot, you know? And I said, that is not a good moment. That's really not a good moment. I said, I can't be happy about that. And I want to understand why that happened. So he gave me some excuses, which were not good excuses. They were not. And he was from abroad and he's European and he blamed it on his Europeanness. And I said, whilst I understand what you're saying, I still don't think it's okay, right? So I think you really should apologize to that person and just think about next time before you say something, how you're going to say it. I said, because look, I know that you're a good surgeon. I know that you mean well, okay, but we just need to be careful about these things if that's okay, you know? And he was apologetic. He apologized to me. I said, you didn't say anything to me. I said, you don't need to apologize to me at all. Just go and, you know, make it up with the F1 that you upset. So he went and he apologized and he was nice to her. And then she messaged me and she said, he's being lovely. So I said, good, that's what we wanted in the end. And then whenever he saw me in the corridor, he was only there for about 3 or 4 months after that. Whenever he saw me, he goes, Dr. Qureshi, how am I doing? And I said, you're doing fine. You're doing great. No, that's how it's doing. So, you know, I think there are ways to, you know, partly, you know, F1 should stand up for themselves. They should. And they shouldn't feel like there will be repercussions for them. Actually, senior people are in a much more difficult position, right, than junior people are. There's so many more protections for junior staff than there ever were. And I know certainly if somebody's bullying one of my F1s, I'll just take it up with that person. I don't care who they are. You know, I'm just like, it's not okay. It is absolutely not okay. In fact, somebody else from another department, another allied healthcare professional, he came to me and he said, I need to have a chat with you about one of your allied healthcare members of staff. And, you know, they've not been very good to other members in our department and stuff like that. And I said, look, as much as I love my colleague, I said, I'm not here for that behavior. I said, if you need to take him to task for what he's doing, you take him to task for what he's doing. I said, I'm not going to interfere with that at all. You carry on. I said, once you've had your thing with him, right, if he wants to talk to me about it, that's cool. If he doesn't, that's okay, but I'm not going to get involved just because I like my colleague and I'm fond of him, right? Doesn't mean that I'm going to get in the way of you taking him to task for poor behavior, because we shouldn't let anybody do that. So, you know, F1 should really speak up and speak up to somebody they're comfortable to. Sometimes it's not your consultant. Your consultant may be the problem. Maybe you can't go to your program director. Maybe it's one of the PGMC staff. Maybe it's the medical director. right? As a junior doctor, I used to walk to the medical director's office and just knock on his door and say, can I talk to you? Without making an appointment. I would just walk to his office. And if he was busy, he would say, I'm busy at the moment. Can you come back later? I'd say, okay, sure. Sometimes he'd say, no, I'm free. Let's talk. So don't feel like there's nowhere to go. There's always somewhere to go. And if all else fails, contact the foundation school. They're there to help, right? They should never feel like there's nobody going to be listening or that your career is going to end. It's not. Okay, anybody with an ounce of sense and an ounce of integrity, if somebody is being genuinely bullied or there's some sort of harassment going on, right, nothing will happen to you, right? Nothing has ever happened to any of my F1s who stood up and made a claim. Never happened, okay? And it's the role of people like me and my colleagues to support them in that. So I would say, if you've got a genuine problem, raise it. Don't ever feel scared.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, in medicine, we do have this sort of fear almost of, like, you've said it perfectly, of repercussions of being said because you're basically lower down the pecking order that it's your fault. And the seniors can never be wrong. But it's so important that you stand up for yourself, fight the right fight, basically. And, you know, you don't allow yourself to be used almost, and you look after yourself, you know, and like you said, reach out to anyone for help. And if you're struggling, I think, you know, with bullying or harassment or, you know, increased workload as well, I imagine if you're struggling with increased workload, reach out to your seniors as well. I'm sure Imran would agree with that, you know, like just, and if you need to take a break, you know, that's really one of the things that we've been focusing here on this What Medical School Doesn't Teach Us podcast is really the idea of, if you need to take a break and you need to take a step back, then do so. Don't like overdo yourself and burn out. And then, you know, that's the last thing any of us want. That's the last thing your seniors would want. And if you're going through difficulties, just, I cannot iterate this enough. Just please just take a breather, sit down, think through it clearly, talk to your friends, talk to your colleagues on the ward, and, you know, talk to your seniors and reach out for help. And yeah, it's so important.
I think I want to mention two things about what you said. The first one is around not raising issues. Okay, so there was an example of a consultant who's not at the trust anymore. But that consultant, every single year that I was TPD, I would get complaints about that person, right? Every without fail, right? And if a junior doctor came from that particular place and said to me, I've just come to talk about one of the consultants, I would say, is it this person? They say, how do you know? And I'm like, because I get complaints every year about this person. But the problem is that usually what happens is that junior doctors say to me, F1 say to me, please don't say anything, right? I'm like, look, I'm not going to say anything if you don't want me to, but the problem with what you're doing is you're just allowing that behavior to perpetuate itself. That's what you're doing.
Yep.
Because I'm not calling the behavior out. So that's why for 4 years, I kept hearing complaints about this consultant. And then finally, one junior doctor wanted me to do something about it. So I did. I phoned the consultant and I said to that consultant, I remember I had a very long conversation with them. I had about an hour and a half conversation with them. I said, somebody's made a complaint about your behavior. And that consultant said, really? Nobody's ever made a complaint about me before. I said, no, they make complaints about you every single year. I just can't tell you because they don't want me to tell you. But now that I can tell you, I'm not going to tell you who the old people are because they still ask me not to tell you. But I get complaints every year about you. And they said, why didn't you tell me? I said, because they don't want me to tell you. I said, that's the problem with the scenario that we have. And it's difficult to tell a colleague that there's people complaining about you and say, well, I can't tell you who they are. But because now I had somebody who was willing to do that, to stand up and say something, I did. And that person's behavior changed quite dramatically within the space of 2 days. You know, we had some back and forth and they were saying, but this and that. They said, no. I said, fine. If that trainee has problems, your role as a supervisor is to help them, right? They may have problems. I'm not saying that trainee doesn't have problems. I'm not saying that, you know, all the F1s that come under my care are made of gold. None of us are. Even us as consultants, we're not. You know, we're all not above or, you know, making mistakes. We make mistakes. But our job as colleagues to each other is to help each other. It's not to think, oh, what an annoying person, and then to make their life a misery. That's not the way it works. It's not helpful. It's not helpful because all that's going to happen, that junior doctor, that F1, phoned me every single day in the evening, and one day he was crying and he goes, I can't take the psychological stress of being in that place with that consultant. You know, and I said, I will move you. Wow. I said, I will move you from that rotation if you want me to. I said, I'll move you. And then he didn't want me to move him. But I said, at least let me talk to that consultant. And he then, when he consented, I did. And then she changed her behavior. Boy, that consultant changed their behavior. And that's a really important thing, right? Because you feel like you're not saying anything. Or, you know, if you say something will happen, but all you're doing is perpetuating somebody else's misery. And the thing is that you may have the psychological resilience to just, in the end, deal with it, brush it off, and it's fine, right? Other people don't.
Yeah.
And what I can say for certain, okay, is over the 5 years I've been training the program director, I get so many F1s coming to me with pre-existing mental health problems. It's really sad, actually, that they do. I get about 4 or 5 every year. 4 or 5 of my trainees will come with mental health problems. And for me, the anxiety is, how do I help them? How do I make sure? So what I usually do is, when I send them my welcome email, I also send them like a Google form. And in the Google form, I'll say, I know that you're supposed to put your information in a transfer information letter, but if there's anything that you want to disclose to me in confidence that I could help you with, please tell me. So this year, some people said, 2 people in particular said, we have quite sort of difficult mental health problems. So I reached out to both of them and I said, let's have a chat. Let's have a conversation, you know? And to one of them, I said, look, you're doing full-time F1 training. That's great. Wonderful move. I said, but if you feel that this is just getting far too much, that your mental health is suffering and you need to drop a day, go less than full-time, I will fully support it, right? Because what I don't need is a junior doctor in difficulty. I don't need that. You know, you need to be happy, healthy, stable. And if that helps you, then that door is open. I said, you carry on. But at any point you want to trigger that, you tell me and I will support it, because I'm not here to cause misery in your life. Okay. So he's clear now that if this all gets too much, he can give me a shout. And then I will support that if he's having genuine difficulties. And that's the way to behave, you know. I mean, when I was a junior doctor, oh my God, you had to have a baby, you had to have a business, what to do less than full time. Now you can just say, look, I'm not in the zone. And it's fine. So we should take advantage of that.
Yeah. Really.
And I do. You know, I've done that 2 or 3 times before for my F1 trainees.
Absolutely.
But those are things to be, you know, if people have enough difficulties in their life, we now have the cost of living crisis, we have ridiculous, you know, rents that people have to pay, they're living far away from home, there's got no support networks. You know, some of my own current F1, my new one, she's never been to London before. Like, how do you support people? Because they're not just here, they're not just, you know, I always say we don't come to the hospital and leave our humanity at the door and in a cloakroom and say, we'll pick you up when we're going home. That follows us everywhere. Yeah. As a personal example, if I have a tiff with my wife in the morning, right, then what happens is, and I know this happens, right, I get to work and half of my brain is thinking about the tiff with my wife, because I don't like having a tiff with my wife, and I've had one, it just bothers me, right, and it's gnawing away at half of my brain. And then when I'm taking phone calls to the hospital and junior doctors are calling me and saying, can we ask your advice about infections and antibiotics, I'm listening, but I'm not listening, right? And I know that in those moments, I have to say, I'm really sorry. Please, can you repeat what you just last said? Because I didn't quite catch it. And I'm not telling them why I'm not catching it, but I can't switch my brain off, right? Because I'm upset.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the bit that nobody else knows. And, you know, just because I'm a consultant doesn't mean that I'm the only one validated to feel like that. I mean, how do I know what my junior colleagues are going through? Somebody might be going through depression or stress, or, you know, 2 years ago, one of my F1s, her mother was terminally ill and she died actually not long after she finished F1. But, you know, what we did was myself and the mess presidents, we actually collected money for her to hire somebody to help her at home. So she used to say to us, she goes, well, I can't get home and I have to cook the meals and I don't get any rest and I get to spend time with my mom. So we basically had meals made for her since she told us to the end, and we provided psychological support, and we just tried to give her more time off when she needed it. And it was a really lovely joint effort from all the F1s in that cohort, and so much love came out of that group. And when her mother finally died, you know, the others had all moved on, but still the love that came out of that group for her was just immense, you know. And again, you know, people are people. They're vulnerable just as everybody else is vulnerable. And for us not to recognize that as human beings is just to the detriment of the health service. I remember I tweeted once, this was a long time ago, I tweeted that, you know, shouldn't we be asking our nursing colleagues who have small children or they have like school runs to do or they're anxious about this, how we can sort of work together to make like a working rota that really works for them as human beings. So we're covering a service, right? But we're also respecting who they are as human beings. And somebody who was not part of the organization, he was an external consultant helping our organization, basically told me that I was chatting rubbish, right? I was like, really? I said, is that rubbish? You know, I don't think so. You know, I don't think that's rubbish at all. In fact, after that, what I decided with my F1s, when I had control over their on-call rotas, and I don't anymore, sadly, but when I did, I used to say at the beginning of the year and before every rotation, I'd say, guys, tell me when you want holidays. Tell me when you want holidays, and I'm going to design the on-call rota around your holidays. So what I didn't feel was good for people and their psychological headspace was to fight. I've got a wedding, my sister's getting married, I'm getting married, blah, 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 right? And people having to fight to take time off. I'm like, that should just be a given. You know, we never get these moments in life back. If we can accommodate it, why don't we? So I used to literally say, when do you want your annual leave? I said, I'm going to try to help you as much as I can. I said, beyond that, once I've made the rota, you guys just have to swap and I can't do anything about it at that point, right? But as much as I can help you in the beginning, I will. So I used to set it up and I used to do all their own calls and they used to do their calls and get their annual leave when they wanted it. You know, I remember one of my F1s, she was part of a Shakespeare society or something. And there was like a really important audition that she wanted to do, like super important for her. And she goes, I'll never get a chance to do this again. And she was on call. It was a Saturday and she was on call. I said, okay, how long will it take you to do the audition? She said, it'll take an hour to get there, an hour to do the audition, an hour to get back. I said, no issue. Let's talk to the reg, on-call reg. Let's talk to the on-call SHO. Let's see how we can support you going just for that bit of the shift and then coming back. She went, did her audition, came back. She didn't get the spot, but, you know, at least she'll remember that, you know, these people realize that this part, this thing in my life was important to me. And they valued my humanity above everything else, you know, and that's where you need to be.
Absolutely. I mean, everything you've said is so true, and I couldn't have put it better myself. I think it's so important for us moving forward, especially in the current times, like you've so clearly said, is that recognizing humanity, recognizing that, you know, now more than ever, we all need to band together and work together to create a working environment that works for all of us and makes us feel fulfilled. Because the last thing any of us want when we leave medical school is to end up feeling like, oh no, this is not the job I want anymore. Because you see like an exodus amount of junior doctors and even consultants like almost exploring other options or, you know, doing other things or leaving the UK as a whole because of this entire toxic workplace, because of the stress that comes from it, because of feeling uncared for, undervalued in terms of pay and otherwise terrible. It's all just like a Pandora's box. There's so many problems, and once you open it, they're all starting to come out now. And we need to kind of like more than ever now is just like band together, have that camaraderie, and, you know, just work together to create the NHS that we want. Create the NHS that we want to look after us when we're ill, or if we're ever ill, or if or when we're ill, you know, create the NHS. And that's what we want to be passing on to future generations, you know, bringing the next generation of medical students, junior doctors into this NHS that works for them as well as they work for it.
I think that you put that so beautifully. And I think that, you know, I realize that we've probably got a few minutes left, and that would be one of the other parting advice that I have for my colleagues, you know, and all junior doctors, but you know, certainly F1s in particular, that what I realized over the years is that the amount of apathy about, you know, the NHS is just increasing for obvious reasons. And, you know, you just elucidated on many of those things, and I'm not going to go into them again. But what that really does, in some ways, it prevents other people from being charitable to other people, like colleagues, right? And I've seen that more and more. And I actually called one of my F1s out, and I said, why? So sometimes what happens, I know if some F1s are sort of down people on boards, what I try to do is I try to rearrange people a little bit just to help compensate for stress. And, you know, every year I find like getting people to help is more and more difficult. Like before, people used to help. And now people are like, well, as long as me and my job, and if I get, you know, 2 hours off to do my thing, it's okay, you know. And I'm like, I said to one of my friends, where does that come from? And he goes, well, we don't get paid very well, you know, nobody's very, you know, nobody's nice to us, you know. I mean, just listed all the other problems that we already know about the NHS. And he goes, so why should I be bothered about helping anybody else? You know? And I was like, I felt really sad. I really felt sad. And I was just like, that's actually what's going to contribute to the demise of the NHS. That really is. And what we need to do, as you said, in such a lovely way, you said, you know, we need to band together. And if we do, right, fine. The maelstrom is happening around us. It is. We know it is. But even if we can contribute to each other's happiness just a little bit, whether it's a nurse, a doctor, a pharmacist, whoever it is, right, if we can help, yeah, imagine what that will do to your day. It was something I remember really well from primary school that my head teacher, his name was Mr. Clements, he used to say to us, I was 5 at this time, but I remember it so well. He used to say, if you're about to cross the road and somebody stops, the car stops to give you way, if you say thank you to them, right, it will make their day and they will do nicer things to other people, right? And I just remember that from when I was a kid as well, you know, like, it's so true. If you make one person happy, they'll do something nice for somebody else. You know, that pay it forward type effect that you get, you know?
Yeah.
And
sort of chain reaction, pay it forward type. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I know things are difficult. I get it. You know, I work in the NHS. You know, I find it hard as well. Believe it or not, as a consultant, I find it hard. And I'm sure that, you know, I'm not one of those consultants who thinks, oh, in my time, you know, I don't feel that. In my time, things were different. The hospital wasn't at 100% occupancy or 105% occupancy, you know. The average age of our patient was much lower. We didn't have 50,000 forms to fill in. We didn't have sort of the stringent e-portfolio stuff that you guys have to manage, right? So it was different for us. Yeah, we worked more hours, definitely. But in other ways, it was easier. So it's just, you know, every generation has their own problems. And I'm not going to say that my generation had worse problems or the one before me. You know, every generation has its own issues, right? And the generation, this generation, has its own issues, which we need to respect in terms of the battles that they're fighting and to some extent that we're fighting as well. But if we don't work together as a team with true, authentic teamwork where we genuinely, you know, hold our hands out to our colleagues and say, I know you're hurting, I know this is tough, you know, I'll give you another example. One of my, and maybe it's a bad thing to admit, but I'm going to say it because I think it was important. One of my junior doctors, her grandfather was dying, okay? And she was going to get one opportunity to see him, but she didn't have enough annual leave, right? And I may get crucified for this, it's okay. You know, I'm a big boy, I'll deal with it. But I said, just take the extra days. I said, that is a moment you will never, ever get back in your life. You'll never be able to see him again. And she went and he died not long after that. And she was so grateful that she got to, I mean, lived abroad. That's why he wasn't in the same country. And she was so grateful that she got to see him one last time before he died. Because how could you live with that regret? How do you live with it?
Absolutely.
You can't, you know. And I didn't want to be the person who stood in the way of her seeing her grandfather for the last time. You know, it's not worth it. You know, fine. She took 2 extra days annual leave, which she didn't really have. But that's okay. No calamity. I knew that we could manage in the department and she could go off and she needed to do her thing. And I think, you know, if we think, you know, about things like that, you know, again, I've done that as a junior doctor. I've not just done that as a consultant. I've done that as a junior doctor when I was an F2, my F1, we were on call. It was a Saturday. We were doing surgery. And he said, Imran, my family has very unexpectedly arrived from Ireland and they're only here for another 7 hours and they're going to leave in the morning and I won't get to spend any time with them, right? Can I go? And there was still like 6 hours of the on-call left. I said, dude, just go. I said, we've done the ward round. We've done most of the jobs. We'll be fine. Go. I was an F2 at that point. I didn't tell anybody. I said, go, right? Because again, you know, fine, there's a little bit more work for me. There is. And for my registrar who was there at the, maybe it was, you know, but nothing compared to that moment for him to go and see his family and to spend time with them and to, you know, make those meaningful bonds that we have in life greater, you know? So I'm not sitting here as a consultant saying I pulled a stunt like that. I pulled a stunt like that when I was an F2. And if we can just show a little bit of charity, understanding everybody, like I respect everybody's humanity just as I want mine to be respected. And if we can keep doing that, I really genuinely feel that despite all the problems that we have, we'll be a happier workplace.
Yeah. I mean, thank you so much for sharing your experiences. There's been so much to take away from all of that. And I think your points about, I mean, the key message that really throughout our conversation, I think, and you would agree on this, has been humanity And it's the fact that, you know, during tough times, or even if times are good or things are going well, like, we need to still stick together, be charitable, remember that we're all humans. And sometimes, yeah, medicine is like our work, like being a doctor is our job, or, you know, but other things matter sometimes, you know, other things are just more important. And in those moments, we need to be there for each other, whether that's, you know, your own well-being, your family's well-being, you've got some other sort of crisis, or, you know, it could be anything. But in that moment, instead of putting each other down and not being supportive, actually be there for them and extend that hand of friendship, you know, extend that hand of support and be like, hey, I've got you. And that is simply, and even if you can't help them in terms of like annual leave or whatever, but you just saying, I'm here for you, that will probably go so far for them that you, none of us can probably even imagine, you know?
100%.
So thank you so much for sharing your stories and your advice. And nope. I'm sure they'll be extremely useful to all the junior doctors and medical students listening.
Yeah, the other thing I'd just like to say, if anybody ever wants to reach out to me, if they need any advice or help, just, you know, I'm happy for my email to be shared. I'll tell you, it's imran.qureshi4@nhs.net. If somebody needs some advice or just wants to talk, you know, I'm always around.
Well, thank you so much for that, Imran. So, you know, guys, you know, I'm absolutely going to advocate. Like, if you're ever stuck, you know, I've personally spoken to Imran and I've heard a lot about him, obviously, and now he's here on the podcast. He's an absolutely fantastic person to reach out to for help. I mean, I've spoken to Imran on LinkedIn, so we'll link all of that down below in the description. So do reach out to him. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Imran.
Thank you for having me.
It's been an absolute honor having you on here.
It's been a privilege. Thank you.
So that's it, guys, for this week. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. And please do follow and, you know, all of that good stuff. And all the links will be down below. Cheers and see you next week. Bye.